Okay, cool.
Blog Talk Radio.
Let's go.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the war room. You got Dev, Kill, Jimmy, PJ, and B. Austin.
I am him.
Commander. Give it to you. How you want it? In a 1 to 2 hour show to keep the brain running with the premise to talk sports on a national level. Bold with them topics. Sort of like some rebels. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five doing prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. From sports medicine to sports veterans and greats. The 4 for 26, so the war ain't Kuwait. It's the war room with 5 nights at the round table. 5 Philly guys diversified and educated.
It's the Slowbot version. All right, everybody, it's Turkey Day, November 24th, 2011, and it's time to eat. You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports. We're having a sports radio version of a potluck tonight. I'm Devin McMillan, and I'm at the dinner table with Jimmy Williams, B. Austin, and Roy Burton of the Broad Street Line. What's up, Roy?
What up? What's going on, fam?
Roy, what's good? The conglomerate is in the building. So tonight, we're going to recap the early games, preview the late game, discuss some hot topics from the week, and reminisce on some Thanksgiving Day football memories as well as other memories. We know you got the itis, so settle in, put your feet up, and turn the volume up high for your whole family to hear. And as usual, we also want you to join the conversation, so jump in that JW Philly Realty chat room at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom or join us on Facebook or Twitter. You can also call us on the Digital Extreme Tech hotline at 323-410-0012. Make sure you get down with the Philly Sports Radio movement. Check out Roy and his partner in crime, Chris, on the Broad Street Line every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Blog Talk Radio. Follow him on Twitter at the BS Line so you can keep up with Roy's updates during tonight's show. So they just had 76ers CEO Adam Aaron on the show this week. So we'll ask Roy about that later on in the show. But right now, Jimmy's going to let us know who's having a Turkey Day birthday.
My birthday, yay!
What's up, gentlemen? Happy holidays to you. Same to you, bro.
Shalom.
Right back at you.
All right, absolutely. Okay, the first birthday I want to bring up, and first of all, birthdays are brought to you by Days of Beauty Hair Salon, which is located at 9221 Oxon Hill Road in Fort Washington, Maryland. Go see Lisa, because some of you ladies out there, your hair is looking horrible. Anyway, the first birthday I want to bring up is one Keith Primo, who turns 40.
My birthday, yay!
Dev, when I say Keith Primo, what's the first thing that comes to mind?
He turns 40. I just want to know how old is he in concussion years.
Oh.
Because I got on Keith Primo. I just need to know how old he really is or how old he feels at this moment.
Be Austin, Keith Primo.
Yo, much like my brother from another mother, Dev, I want to know exactly how much of his life has been spent knocked the F out.
Yeah, he's like synonymous with concussion. Let's see. Brother Roy, what's good? What do you think of when I say Keith Primo?
Keith Primo, I actually have some memories that don't involve concussions with Mr. Primo. He was the one guy who actually scored. I don't know if you guys remember. He scored that goal in that Flyers playoff game against the Penguins that went like five overtimes.
He
scored that goal after like 6 hours of hockey. That's pretty much, other than that goal, I don't have too many memories involved Keith Primo that don't involve.
He probably
like
went to the locker room after that goal.
It's hard to think of Keith Primo without thinking of concussion. So for me, that's exactly what it is. So shout out to him on his birthday.
Hey, Jimmy, he probably celebrated in the locker room and hit his head on something and concussed.
The next birthday I want to bring is Oscar Palmer Robertson, who turned 73.
My birthday, yay!
I'm going to start with you this time, Roy. When I say Oscar Robertson, what comes to mind?
Well obviously, you got to talk about how he averaged a triple-double for an entire season, which is just, ridiculous. But see, people don't understand. He was 6'5", but he averaged 10 rebounds a game three times in his career, and he had 181 triple-doubles in his career. 181 triple-doubles. He was 6'5". It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, that's crazy.
The kind of numbers he put up.
That's crazy. Me and Dev were talking last week. And we were trying to figure out, if you look at old statistics in the NBA, it seemed like everybody grabbed rebounds back then. Like, cats used to get 38 boards and all kinds of crazy numbers.
B. Austin. If I say Oscar Robertson, what comes to mind?
Okay. The first thing that comes to mind was why was his shorts that high? But everybody's shorts was that high back then. The second thing I'm going to say is listen carefully. I'm going to repeat his name. Oscar Palmer Robertson. Now, stop talking about LeBron James. All right, keep going.
Okay, so you want to take a shot at LeBron, but now, when I think of Oscar Robertson personally, I think of triple-double, but Dev, how about you?
I think of record book, because whenever anybody's doing something, Oscar's name is one of those names that they surpass, you know, in the record books. But, yeah, he played the 1, the 2, and the 3. Like Roy said, he was 6'5". And I just wish I could have seen him play, because he must have been a monster.
Yeah, he definitely had to be. Like, the numbers you see when you look at the history books are, like, crazy. So, shout out to him on his birthday. He turned 73. The next birthday, one Paul John Tagliabue turned 71. So, shout out to Paul Tagliabue on his birthday. But,
birthday,
Dad, let's start with
yay!
Your son. Paul Tagliabue.
Well, Paul Tagliabue was the commissioner of the NFL for, you know, most of my life watching football. So I'm just going to go ahead and say he's the best commissioner of my lifetime, because Roger Goodell, you know, he's of a different breed. And he's trying to take the league somewhere that I'm not too fond of. So shout out to Paul Tagliabue. We need you back.
I heard that. Roy, Paul Tagliabue.
Let me just echo that. Yeah, Paul Tagliabue was probably the best commissioner of my lifetime. I mean, you know, Pete Rozelle was a commissioner before him, and he was probably the best commissioner ever. But, you know, definitely Paul Tagliabue when I was growing up. But one thing I just want to bring up, you know, with all these talk about, you know, like CBAs and lockouts and strikes and all that stuff like that, when Tagliabue was a commissioner, there wasn't any labor, you know, disagreements, you know, while they were going on. There was no labor, there was no strikes or no lockouts. And he was a commissioner for almost 20 years, so.
I was thinking about that, but do you think that's a timing thing as well? Because considering, like, the world we live in now with social media and how everybody has access to everything, that it just seems different? Or do you think that he really was that much better?
Yeah, you know what? That's a good point. I didn't really think about that. I'm just so amazed at it, the fact that, you know, basically every major league, except for baseball in the last, you know, 5 or 10 years has been on strike, and Pete Rozelle went almost 2 decades. I mean, Paul Tagliabue went almost 2 decades.
That's crazy.
He didn't have anything, so that's all.
He called, like, two sides of crackheads. They just, like, let's make a deal, okay? Like, that didn't take long at all. We'll get into that later.
No doubt. D. Austin.
You know, as with y'all, grew up under Paul Tagliabue. That's the NFL that, you know, I know and love. And I think that, you know, with Roger Goodell, what we're seeing is a trend that's going to head towards rainbow-colored flags being draped on the football players, and then if you pull the flag, that's how they're going to be tackled. I think that's what Goodell is trying to get to. Definitely rainbow-colored.
Yeah,
but shout out to Paul, man. Happy birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday to Paul Tagliabue, who's definitely one of the best commissioners. You know, so shout out to him on his birthday. He turned 71. And the last birthday I want to bring up is one Jonathan Robert Papelbon, who turned 31
Yay!
Years young. Let me start with you, Roy. John Papelbon.
Well, first of all, Jonathan Papelbon, welcome to Philadelphia. We're, you know, glad to have you as our closer. A lot of people hate the dude. I don't really hate the dude. I don't really care about him either way, you know, more or less. But the one thing I actually do like about him, I'm not sure if this is going to happen, but the rumor is going around that he actually might use a Root song as his bullpen music when he comes out in 2012. So. So if he comes out to, like, Here I Come or something like that, then you know what, I'm down with Papelbon.
You know, he will forever be a favorite of mine if he does that. Dev. What you got, Dev?
I just hope that he, you know, comes to Philly and plays at a high level, commensurate with the salary that they gave him. And, you know, for now, you know how we do in Philly. For now, we're rooting for you. Mess up. Don't get
fooled. That's all you got to say now.
So don't mess up.
Yeah. Be
on. Yo. Giz a Papelbon. Giz, what is a Papelbon? Closer, he got a lot of money to be a closer. He got a lot. He got more than Mariano at the Marriott.
That's part of the game.
more than Mariano at the Marriott. So I hope he comes here and balls.
Hey, look, man, that's an important part of winning playoff baseball. So shout out to him. I say rob and get as much as you can. So anyway, those are the birthdays, again, brought to you by Days of Beauty Hair Salon. Dev, tell everybody what happened while they were on the grind.
All right, y'all, I'm going to tell everybody what happened today while y'all were on the grub. Nobody was grinding today. Everybody was getting their grub on. So,
yeah, no doubt.
Actually, you know, this happened earlier in the week. Verlander wins the AL MVP in addition to his AL Cy Young. Roy, go to you. What do you think about that? Do you think that's a deserved win?
I mean, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, you know, the definition of the award is most valuable player, and if, you know, Justin Verlander is deemed the most valuable player to the team, it doesn't matter that he has a separate award for being a, you know, for being a pitcher. I mean, look, he was 24-5, and he had a 2.4 ERA. I mean, it's kind of hard to knock somebody with that kind of stats from getting the MVP.
Right.
So I have no problem with that.
I'm one of the guys who kind of thinks that a starting pitcher shouldn't be eligible to win the MVP. I mean, it's not that serious for me, so congratulations to him. But, you know, he only played in 21% of their games, even though when he played, they won. But, you know, it's kind of difficult for me to give that to him over an everyday player, you know, who's going out there every day and doing his thing. But at the same time, there were no overwhelming favorites. So if there was a year for a pitcher to step up and have a big year and actually get an MVP, this was the year.
Yeah, it's funny because I thought the same way. Well, I was actually on the fence because you remember earlier in the year, I said he should win the MVP. I said it jokingly, not thinking that he had a chance to really do it. But I was listening. It's funny, I was watching a video by Ezra from Idiot Sports Talk, and he actually broke down some statistics that I never thought about. He started breaking down the amount of at-bats that an average player has and how many batters a pitcher faces. And when you look at the numbers, a pitcher actually, you know, if you break it down statistically, and you know numbers can lie, that a pitcher can have just as much of an impact even though they only play every couple of days, you know, to a batter or what have you. I know it's crazy what I'm trying to say, but I'll send you guys a video to take a look at the stats. But
I see. A pitcher does face a lot of batters during a game, so, you know, once you start adding up all the work that he's doing.
When you start looking at the amount of work they do versus the amount of work that, say, you know, an average person, like in terms of at bats, they have, you know. But again,
opinion,
like you said, they have their own award.
Right. That's why I kind of think that the Cy Young is an MVP for a pitcher. But this year, like I said, this is my opinion on this. He, you know, I don't think a pitcher should be eligible for it, but if someone was to say, okay, name me somebody else who should have won, I probably couldn't do that. So.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right, so, and then shout out to Ryan Braun. He won the National League MVP. I guess because Verlander took two awards, Ryan Braun is kind of faded into the background. But do you guys think that was a good pick? Because a lot of people think that Matt Kemp should have won it.
I don't want to win with Kemp.
You probably have went with Kemp because Rihanna was some of his former work.
That's exactly what he's thinking.
Exactly. You
know
me
well.
Did
y'all hear D'Angelo Hall after Sunday's game? You know, he got burnt on two big plays. He's been getting burnt on plays all year. As a matter of fact, he's been getting
I'd like to weigh in on this.
Yeah, he says that he thinks he should be cut. And he's not worth the money that the Redskins are paying him. So, Austin, you must agree with him.
Actually, I disagree with him because I feel that D'Angelo Hall has been a fraud for most of his career. And what he's really saying by giving this poor mouth is, okay, cut me so that I can go to a winning team with a chance in the playoffs. That's what that really is about.
What winning team is going to pick him up?
Hopefully none. Hopefully we won't have to see that happen, that scenario play out. I have a statistic.
All he does is get cooked and then start a fight after every play he gets cooked.
Yeah, I got a statistic for y'all. Last year he went to the Pro Bowl. I think he had double-digit interceptions or close to it.
He only had six. four of them came in
six.
That one game.
He was
he only had six.
He gave up the most yardage and the most completions in the NFL. It was north of 50 completions for over 1,008 yards.
Yeah, so basically,
wow.
He gave up a receiver's whole season.
He gave up a Pro Bowl receiver's whole season.
Wow.
He's a fraud.
So 50 receptions,
with a
neck that's more like a DeSean Jackson season. Like 50 receptions for a grand.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, he's trash, and, you know, I don't know whether he's trying to get on a good team. A lot of people speculate that's what he's trying to do, but like you said, Dev, it doesn't matter because he's trash. Like, he's always been overrated. He had four picks in one game last year. Who threw him those picks?
Cutler. Jay Cutler.
Yeah. I just wanted somebody to say that because, you know, I didn't want to say it because, you know, I hate Cutler, so... But, yeah, Jay Cutler threw four picks in one game and basically got him to the Pro Bowl. But outside of playing Cutler or Favre, he's trash.
But you know what? The thing is, he's trash, but he's a Redskins team captain. Like, how does that happen?
Yo, wait. Roy, we down here in the D.C. market, and a lot of funny stuff happens in D.C. A lot of funny stuff.
What he said now, because he said a lot of players – called him to make sure he was okay. But he was saying, you know, I'm the team captain. I was just, you know, doing that to get the blame, you know, the attention placed on me so other guys wouldn't have to take that. But my swag is still on 100. So, you know, he's claiming he was just saying that as a team captain to get the attention put onto him. But I don't think you needed to do that because everybody watching the game saw that it was your fault. So you don't have to be super captain. You know,
so if his swag is on 100, what's he play like when his swag's not on 100?
Yo, he, first of all, he said swag, and he got a neck tattoo.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, he should get a five-game suspension for saying the word swag.
Yeah. All right, so also earlier in the week, Sid the Kid Crosby, he got back on the ice after almost a year layoff with post-concussion symptoms. He came back, 2 goals, 2 assists. Roy, what do you think, man? You think, first of all, do you think Sid Crosby is the best player in the league? And
yes.
Then I think,
yes. Good. Yeah. Sid is definitely the best player in the league. I mean, you kind of saw what he could do when he came back. I guess the Islanders, 2 goals, 2 assists. But, you know, I mean, for Sid, I mean, I'm kind of worried about just his career going forward. I mean, he was out 10 months.
Yeah,
with this concussion. I mean, we saw, you know, we talked about a man, Keith Primo. We saw another guy, Eric Lindros. You know, they got blown up a few times. They didn't miss 10 months. So, I mean, there's something going on with his
and what was funny about Sid's case is he was still suffering from symptoms months into that. So, like, 4, 5, 6 months later, he was still failing concussion tests. So you have to worry about him going forward. But with that return, how do you come back to a sport that requires so much skill and coordination and you just dominate it and be involved in 4 of your team's 5 goals?
Yeah, and
you know,
and
nice.
Besides, I mean, I think added to, you know, him failing the test, I think since he's the face of the league, I think the Penguins are also being extra cautious about, you know, what they were going to do with him and how fast they were going to bring him back. So I think that played a big part into it also. last story on the grind. Y'all, man, Earl J.R. Smith is in the news in China. They're saying his Chinese team is frustrated because of all of his diva-like demands. Now, according to Zhao Bing, the club provided him with a presidential suite at a cost of 6,880 yuan per day. I don't know how much that is. Is that yuan or is that just how you how yen is?
I don't know how it's pronounced. But I looked it up. It's $1,100 a night.
$11 a night for his presidential suite. Then $700,000 in insurance as he requested. I guess this dude was asking to be.
Oh,
he
no.
Probably wanted
what's
a helicopter
the
to drop
name,
him off from
the
roof.
What's the guy's name that reported this?
Zhao Bing.
Not Yao Ming, but Zhao Bing. It sounds like a funny name.
Yeah. And they also said that he has missed training 3 times with illness excuses. So.
And they caught him shopping on one of those.
Yeah, look,
when he shopping did a press conference, like training, I'm supposed to be the franchise plan. We talking about training.
Well, you know, shout out to him for leaving because he signed that contract a while ago and people still was hoping that a season would get started right away. And so he hasn't missed a check yet. So shout out to him for not missing a check while everybody else is back home missing checks.
Yeah. I mean, we always talk about him in the war room. He's quite the knucklehead. So I guess he feels like I'm just going to go over here and I'm going to be the man. So they're going to have to treat me like the Lakers treat Kobe. And I don't know. It doesn't seem to be working out because they're close to waving the dude. Like I said, they say
he probably gets a call and gets him a nice check. He probably get a nice check if they try to wave him too.
It would have to be
some sort of settlement. My problem is I've been a JR supporter and saying, you know, wait a while, look at his talent. He's gonna come around. He's gonna get it all together. You know, dude is just a head case. He can give you 45 one night in the NBA against another superstar and then come back and go 0-16 the following night against somebody like Ira Noble. I mean, he is what he is, man. He's a nut. A talented nut. With too many tattoos.
There's JR for you. Like I said, he went over there to China and just thought he was a man.
We're talking about practice. Not a game. We're talking about practice.
We're talking about training, man. So that's what happened, everybody, while y'all were on the grind. On the Grind was brought to you by PhillyAutoDesign.com. Take it away, Jim.
You already know. Listen, time to pass the rock. And pass the rock is brought to you by Bay Financial Services. To get more information about Bay Financial Services, visit our website, warroomsports.com. You can look at the tab right there for Bay Financial Services. Now, for those who don't know or are listening for the first time, Pass the Rock is when we vent on our chosen sports issue or report our favorite headline from the week. And with that being said, I'm going to end on the rock with Dev.
All right.
Tell them
why
you
mad, sir.
I'm a little upset, and I didn't really have time to sit and prepare anything. So I'm going to just go off the cuff because this is related to my PTR from last Thanksgiving when I railed on the Detroit Lions, asking the NFL and the world why we're subjected to watching them play every Thanksgiving. Now, you know, a lot of people came at me earlier in the season talking about how improved the team was and did I still mean it. Look, 1 year out of, like, 56 doesn't make you a good team or a good franchise, and personally, I still don't believe in them now. You saw what happened earlier. They went on TV and embarrassed themselves again. So I ask again, why are we subjected to watching the Detroit Lions every year while we're trying to get our turkey grub on? Somebody at the league offices had to do something about this tradition because it's traditionally bad, and I'm tired of it. And I picked up Kevin Smith this week in my fantasy league. Thought he was about to get off, and the dude got hurt without even getting touched. So that's all I got. And with that, I'm going to throw the ball back to Jimmy. Matter of fact, I'm going to fake it to Jimmy. I'm going to throw the ball to B. Austin and let him pass it to Jimmy running down the wing. B. Austin, take that.
I'm running down the wing. Yo, is my mic on? Is my mic on? Yo, turn me up in the headphones, yo.
Your mic sound nice. Check one.
Mic sound nice. Everybody that's sitting down, enjoying their turkey, having their cranberry sauce, eating their mac and cheese, pause for a moment. Put your fork down. We're about to rap about Tim Tebow, a.k.a. here in the war room, the most offensive nickname that we've ever come up with, Backup Jesus. Now, the problem that society has with Tim Tebow is really we found a person that doesn't fit in today's world, really. This is a guy who stands up for his beliefs and is willing to do what others will not, live on national TV, regardless of whether it's politically correct. We're so sensitive, we're so caught up in not offending others and not wanting their feelings to be hurt, Tim Tebow stands up for what he feels is right. Principles, values, morals. So what? The dude prays live on TV. Some could say it's embarrassing. Some could say it's him forcing his religion on the world. I look at it a little bit different. In this day and age, it's very rare that we find a man of integrity who will stand up for his beliefs and who will put himself out there essentially for ridicule and to be made fun of. So I applaud his character. As far as him being a quarterback in the NFL, listen, I don't think I've ever seen anything worse than what Tim Tebow does with a football. However, it is pointed out, Jimmy, you ran some stats down to me. Compare Tim Tebow's first few games to John Elway's first games for me for a minute, brother. I need your help on this.
Not a problem. Well, in the first 8 games of their career, John Elway was 3-5, where Tim Tebow is 5-3. Tim Tebow has over 500 rushing yards when Elway had 90 rushing yards. Tim Tebow has more touchdowns rushing. Tim Tebow actually has more touchdowns passing and less interceptions. And believe it or not, Tim Tebow has more passing yards in his first 8 games than John Elway.
Now, I'm by no means saying that Tim Tebow will ever come close to accomplishing what John Elway has accomplished. Hell, John Elway is arguably one of the greatest quarterbacks, if not the greatest quarterback of all time. However, I think we're rushing to judgment on where Tim Tebow will end up, and I don't think it's really fair to him. The problem that we have with Tim Tebow is because he appears to be perfect, and I say appears, we're forced to hold ourselves up and measure ourselves by his standard. And that turns people off. And so they get upset, they get angry, they hurl insults, they talk crazy about the dude. When in reality, it's not Tim Tebow that's forcing you to measure yourself against him. That's just the pressures of society and you messing up and not sticking true to your values. So now you see somebody in the limelight who is, and you feel a little a little short on the stick. So I shout out Tim Tebow. I respect him for what he's trying to do. I respect him for who he is. As Trent Dilfer mentioned, though, you cannot base your career on intangibles. And your actual mechanics are god-awful. I don't know how long the backup Jesus thing is going to work for you, but shout out to you. I respect you. Let me pass the rock to my man Jimmy. Give these people some bars, homie.
No doubt. And I agree with pretty much what you said in reference to Tim Tebow, specifically with Jake Plummer coming at his neck, as if Jake Plummer didn't make the Colts defense look like they were all pros every year he played them in the playoffs. But that's neither here nor there. What's up, Warren World? This is Jimmy, of course. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. And I'll be very, very brief this week. This past week, I've been watching NBA TV, and I saw a couple documentaries, one on Big Game Chains, and then I watched one on Run TMC, and it made me realize how much I like basketball. Then I listened to, Roy and Chris talk to the new Sixers management in reference to them lowering ticket prices, and they finally got rid of that god-awful hip-hop, who was, pretty much a disgrace, and also culturally biased, but that's neither here nor there. But it made me excited. It made me say, look, I wish basketball was here. And it kind of, pissed me off because, I'm forced to watch football, and of course we all love football, but we love hoops too, so I'm kind of upset. So one thing I want to say is if anybody can get in touch with any kind of promoter, I want somebody to set up a triple cage match between me and David Stern. At least a Hell in a Cell or something like that, because I need to see David Stern because I'm angry right now. I know football is going on this Thanksgiving, but, what happened to watching the hoops game? So when Christmas comes, if we don't have basketball on Christmas, I'm really going to be pissed. And that's when we as the War Room go out and start to look for David Stern. But all I want to say, if anybody can get in touch with, any kind of promoter, Vince McMahon, whoever it may be, set up that triple cage match, yo. I'll take care of it for all the fans out there. And I'm nice. Yo, I'm going to let the homie Roy from the Broad Street line finish it off as he is our special guest on this Thanksgiving. Roy.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it. Appreciate it very much. taking the ball about to go baseline, but it's time to hit everybody with a double dose of this Tim Tebow tonight, because I got a little something I need to get off my chest right now. Good evening, War Room family. I need some help. Not from everyone. I just need help from those of you who, in your heart of hearts, truly don't like Tim Tebow. Now, it's one thing to knock his skills as a quarterback. Like, we all know, as B. Austin said, we all know that he lacks the single most important skill that's required for the position, accuracy. I get that. You get that. But a lot of you people out there have a general disdain for the man that goes far beyond the ability, his ability, to throw the 15-yard out. And I just don't understand that. Like, from what I can tell, he's the type of man that if you had a daughter, you would want your daughter to marry him. I mean, he's educated, he's well-spoken, comes from a strong, God-fearing family. You know, instead of wasting his summers like a lot of high school kids do, he actually went to the Philippines and circumcised kids. I mean, look, I mean, what else do you want from the man? You know, he's even embraced the phenomenon known as Tebowing, which is a clear allusion to his Christian beliefs. And I know his story almost sounds too good to be true. I understand all that. So I'm sure some of you out there are just waiting for those skeletons to come out of the Tebow closet. And if that's why you don't like the man, then you know what? I kind of understand that on some level. I mean, look, he went 34-5 in Florida, won 2 national titles, a Heisman Trophy, and still allegedly maintained his vow of celibacy. Now, if he wanted to, he easily could have gone the route like my man Brandon Davies at BYU had been the super soaking champion of Gainesville, Florida. But he chose not to. You know, so for those of you out there who are mad at him for being a better man than you would have been in that position, then I guess I can understand that on some level too. You know? But seriously, all kidding aside, the man knows how to win football games. I mean, as Jimmy said, he's 5-3 and 8 career starts. In 17 total games, he has a touchdown to interception ratio of 12-4. And he's rushed for another 9 touchdowns on top of that. So, in basically a season's worth of action, he's already accounted for 21 touchdowns. And there aren't that many players of his age or experience level that can say that. So, in closing, if Tebow's commitment to football is like the commitment he has to his Heavenly Father, then he's going to get these quarterback things worked out. And he may not have the most important skill. Of quarterbacking yet, accuracy, but he does excel at the most important outcome of any sport. And that's winning. And so I don't know about you, those of you out there who don't like Tim Tebow, but I'm always going to take the side of the winner. And that's all I got to say on that. So I'm going to take the ball. I'm going to go baseline, spin off the man. The man's going to come up. The help side defender's going to come up. I'm going to jump up. I'm going to bang it on him. And then when I come down, I'm going to squat and point like Sean Kemp did to Alton Lister. I'm going to run that ground. Go.
He gave him a squatting point.
Hey, Dad, somebody actually on Twitter told me they would rather throw for 400 yards and 5 touchdowns and lose than to win the way that Tebow wins. Somebody actually said that.
Yo, that's the problem with society. That's the problem with society, man. And let's not get us into another PTR, but all the black people out there that hate Tim Tebow, yo, what's the difference between him, Vince Young, and even Michael Vick, for that matter? Except they run their 40s faster.
I'll tell you what. B. Austin, tell everybody real quick how they can get in touch with us.
All listeners, as you're enjoying your turkey, check out our website at warroomsports.com. While you're there, be sure and sign up for the War Report, the absolute greatest weekly sports newsletter in the land. Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message to one of us about our company, our show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. For general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. While you're browsing the site, take the time to click on the Memorabilia tab to buy some cool War Room Sports merchandise, and then click on the Blog tab to read our latest sports articles in the All's Fair in Sports and War blog. Some of the greatest features in the land on that blog. So check it out. Get your read on. Take the time to click on the respective icons to like our Facebook page or to follow us on Twitter or to subscribe to our iTunes podcast to download our free War Room Sports mobile app on your Android or Apple devices. And to watch our YouTube videos, go to warroomsportstv.com. That's War Room Sports TV. Yeah, we get into that TV game, too. We get money. Join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom. To get into the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to create an account, you can also sign in through your Facebook or Twitter accounts. And while you're at it, click follow to make The War Room one of your favorite Blog Talk Radio shows and to get your updates and reminders about our show. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room every week during the show. To call in and speak to the host, dial the Digital Extreme Technologies hotline at 323-410-0012. Then press 1 when prompted. We'll probably take the call live from our LA studios. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. Pressing 1 is like raising your hand. So raise your hand, and we might just call on you. What's going on in the chat room, fellas?
Some people on Twitter talking about how bad the Cowboys are. That's all. You know, the Cowboys.
Yeah, what's the update on that? What's the update on that game? What's that game looking like?
Dolphins are actually winning the game. So, you know, people are complaining about that.
You say what? I said the Dolphins have been leaving too many points on the field, though. But we'll get to that also.
He can come back, you know.
Yeah.
I'm surprised Romo is not playing well. Because Romo is Indian, right?
Wow.
On Thanksgiving, I would assume that Romo will put up numbers. Because, well, some people see that he is Indian, like the way he's always killing the Cowboys. But that's either here nor there. But go ahead, Dan.
All right, the Hot Topics are brought to you by Audible. Schedule too hectic to read as much as you want? Well, try audiobooks and kick back and let someone else do the reading for you. All you have to do is visit Audible and sign up for your free trial at audibletrial.com/warroomsports. In no time, you can be listening to bestsellers by getting the other stuff done at the same time. All right, we got to talk real quick about this MMA event that we went to in D.C. This past Saturday.
Hello, everybody.
And what... Jimmy, so what are your thoughts on what we saw during the MMA event?
First off, shout out to all the promoters and everybody who put the event together from One World MMA because they treated the War Room like, you know, the kings we are, sitting in the front row and whatnot at the press box. But it was an interesting event. I've been to professional, but I've been to like the big boy event, the UFC, so to speak, and to watch these guys fight. It was brutal. These are guys who are hungry. They're up and coming, and they're trying to make a name for themselves. So, like, in terms of fighting, you know, it gets no better than this. These guys were going extremely hard trying to make a name. They were trying to knock each other out, and, you know, it happened a lot that evening while we were there. I had a good time there. But in terms of the actual events, you know, our fighter, Kyle Sefcik, who was actually in the War Room last week, he had a little setback. But I'll tell you one thing. He's the toughest dude I've ever seen.
Man.
The dude is like Rocky. He was bleeding all over the place. Yo, I've never seen anything like that. But, Dev, what did you want to say?
Kyle is a nut. That's what I want to say. Dude is crazy. His fight was very interesting.
Fight MMA, you have to have like a certain mind state anyway. You know, you talk about a warrior. When these guys who play like baseball call themselves warriors, that's why I start to laugh. Like, are you kidding me? They put you in a cage and lock the cage. You know, they lock you in there and tell you to go ahead. It's like street fights with a ref, like you like to say. But, you know, it was a lot of hungry, young, up-and-coming fighters there. I really enjoyed myself. Dev, what you want to say about the overall event?
Well, the overall event, like you said, that was my first time actually seeing MMA live. And, I mean, you saw how I was kind of – that's your thing that you've been trying to get me into. And it's a brutal sport even for me. So, I mean, you saw that one guy. I don't know him from the can of paint, but when he was about to get killed, I jumped up.
Roy, are you in the MMA at all?
No, that's what I was going to ask you. I'm glad you brought it up because I was kind of curious to see how that event kind of compared to the stuff that we kind of see on TV because other than the stuff they show on, like, Spike or whatever, I'm not really familiar with the sport.
Okay. Well, these guys were, like, it was kind of brutal. Like, even for me, who I love MMA, but I enjoyed it at the same time. I mean, I must be sick. But it was one event, and this is something I'll never forget for those listening right now or in the podcast. It was one fight. Well, this guy got knocked out, and like I'm saying, knocked out. His eyes rolled in the back of his head. His body went completely flat. Dev jumps up and like runs to the cage, screaming, "Stop the fight!" I swear if Dez had a towel, he would have threw it in. He tried to throw his hat in the cage. That was one of the funniest moments in the history of my life, bro. That was
completely reactive. Like I didn't mean to do that. It was just in me to do that. Like I couldn't help myself. I just jumped
in. Like a scene from Rocky.
Yeah.
Man, if he hit the guy one more time, he might have died, man. I didn't want to see nobody die. I just thought that one.
He has a compassionate heart. He was looking out for dude. The thing that I love about this, Roy, and to our fans, is that these fights at this level can't be about the money. So these cats are doing this for the love of the sport and the ability to test their abilities and skill against the next man who says, yo, I'm better than you. No, I'm better than you. Well, let's get in the ring and, you know, we'll see who's really better. And so you have to have a high level of respect for them. Skill levels were at different, you know, different points. You had some guys that were in the cage that really looked skilled and talented. You had other guys that just were, you know, tough guys that wanted to test themselves. Kyle Sefcik gave me one of the realest and funniest moments of my life. His face was bruised, battered, and broken, and he looked up with the most sincerest look in his eyes, and he said, dude, I swear to God, I was just getting started.
Yo, I was and just the, getting started. And the bad part about that is I believe him.
Yeah.
Because he took punishment like a champ. Really? That could have been like some Rocky Mr. T type stuff, because the dude who was shorter than him but much more, you know, built, compact, he seemed to be tiring out a little bit. And for all of you guys who don't know what we're talking about, his fight, the guy that we had on the show last week, his fight was stopped near the end of the second round because of a bad cut that he had on his face. But like I said earlier, Kyle's a nut, because right before they stopped the fight, when he realized how bad the cut was, he felt the cut with his hand. Took his hand, licked it, like put the blood in his mouth, and then put his hands back up and went out ready to fight. And then the ref said, no, we got to stop it. It's too bad.
Yeah.
Fight doctor.
And to Austin's point, like, yo, these dudes are real gladiators who are, like, into the sport and fight for the love. And this is something, Roy, that I found interesting. Like, there was one fight. It was a fighter that we all enjoyed. His name was, we don't know what his name was, but his nickname was Father Time, is what they called him. Father Time is fighting this one guy, and it's a close fight. The guy hits him below the belt. So they, like, you know, give him a breather to catch himself together after getting hit below the belt. And when he got hit below the belt, he kind of snapped. He snapped and beat this other guy so bad that 2 hours later, the dude was walking around the arena, and he was still bleeding. But what I found interesting about this is we saw these cats fight. He knocked the dude out, and, yo, they were later on that evening, they were having a beer together. I'm like, yo, how do you get into a ring and a cage and fight with somebody trying to hurt them? And then, like, later on, y'all having a beer, like, you know, like you just didn't try to, like, kill this guy. So I just found that interesting, too.
These dudes were far more disappointed in letting their fans down with losses than they were, you know, concerned with their own health. They didn't care that they was, like, their block was knocked off, their head was coming off. They was like, yo, my bad that I lost. Y'all bought T-shirts. Y'all came through deep. I wanted to give y'all a show.
Yeah.
So
but,
you have to respect
them. Overall, it was a great event. And, you know, we just want to give a shout-out to the event's promoter, Mark Gonzalez from One World MMA. You put on a great show. We also want to give a shout-out to Tommy Como, who is a part of the War Room team now. He wrote a nice blog on the event. So you can go to our website, warroomsports.com, click on the blog tab, and you can see Tommy's recap of the whole evening. But same night after this, you know, we left the arena, went down to Hooters, and watched the UFC 139 take place, and the main event in that one didn't disappoint either. Jimmy, you can speak to it a little bit.
Yeah,
this is pretty much familiar with these guys.
Yeah, they're saying that this may be one of the greatest fights ever. It was Dan Henderson versus Mauricio Shogun Rua. Dan Henderson's a legend in the sport, and Mauricio Shogun Rua is a former light heavyweight champion of the UFC. And these guys were like, It was like watching MMA at its highest level. You would think that one person's getting ready to get knocked out, and they come back and put a hold on, and somebody's getting ready to tap out. And I mean, they were just going back and forth, and they fought for 5 rounds. I mean, it was brutal. They both were bleeding and cut at the end of the fight with black eyes, but I mean, they put on a hell of a show, and it was just amazing to watch to see people at this level. Because you watch like some of the up and coming guys, and then watch the guys at this level who are both legends in the sport, and you know, they both almost got knocked out and tapped out multiple times during this fight. And, I mean, they were just getting it in, more or less. It was a definitely an entertaining fight. But, yo, when I watch this stuff, I say, yo, I don't know how you do this for a living. There has to be a better way to make a living, yo, because that's...
Yeah. I think Hua is like a higher-level Kyle Sefcik, because there were plenty of times during that match where you thought he was just done. He was getting pummeled, and, you know, he came back. And
yeah,
at the
yeah,
end,
it
made it very interesting. It took the fight.
At the end of that fight, in the fifth round, there were points and times where both fighters had the advantage, and they were literally so tired that they couldn't do anything about it. You're screaming at the TV like, Dan, knock his ass out. And Dan could barely hold his guard up. Or you're looking at Hua like, yo, kick this dude in his life and end it, and dude couldn't lift his leg up to kick him in his life.
They left it all out there. They left it all out there,
and it's funny because Henderson's style, it's like he looks kind of reserved and like an old man, and then when he swings the right, it's like he turns into another human being with that right hand.
His right hand is like it's like a building. He put several people to sleep with that right hand. He almost put Hua to sleep, but it's like, yo, his heart, he has too much heart. It's like, that's one of those fights. It used to be like this in boxing years ago. You haven't seen this boxing fight like this in years where there's like no loser at the end. Somebody gets the decision, but it's like you both win for the kind of show you want.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
I totally 110% agree with that.
Yeah, you get 100. Respect, like the heart you show.
I don't believe in moral victories. But that was a moral victory for Roa.
Yeah, it definitely was. It definitely was. It's one of them fights where, you know, you both get respect and, like, nobody really will lose. Somebody gets the decision, but, you know, both guys end up winning in that fight. So, yeah, that was interesting that that happened, you know, right after.
Basically, we had a great night of brutal combat.
Of brutality.
Yeah.
Let me ask you guys a question. And, Roy, you can chime on this as well. A week before... Okay. The UFC had a match in which ended in a fast knockout. And, like, when you watch these events, I mean, when you any kind of combat sport, the fight can go anyway. But I was talking to people who were in the MMA this week, and they were saying that this was a great fight, one of the greatest ever, but they're not sure how this would have translated if this happened to be the Fox fight, because so many people still aren't sold on MMA because of the brutality. Do you think a great fight like this would have worked positive or negative if it happened to come on Fox?
Positive. This would have definitely been
positive.
Positive,
because if you tune in to a combat sport, this is what you want to see. I mean, I'm a boxing fan, and I don't think it's as brutal as this, but when you do turn to a boxing match, you know, you want to see the two dudes getting it on. You don't want to see some one-sided match where nobody gets knocked out and the decision is questionable. You know, you want to see two guys go out there and leave it all on the line.
Before Roy even answers, let me tell you what the counter argument was. And actually, it was funny because Dana White said this. He said he wasn't sure. He said the reason being is, I'm not sure whether you noticed or not, but a lot of states don't even sanction MMA matches because of the brutality. And the counter argument was that although this was a great fight, it was very brutal with the blood and whatever. And they don't know whether it would have had a major setback in terms of getting other jurisdictions, or it would have made the sport more popular. But Roy, what is your opinion?
Yeah, no, I think I want to just echo that same point. Like, I think you want to see action. I mean, like, even in boxing, I mean, you know, the fights you want to see the, you know, the Ward Gotti. Like, you want to see that brutality, you know. Some level, everybody wants to see that bloody, you know, knockdown, drag-out kind of thing. So, I mean, if this fight was, like, you know, the UFC equivalent of that, then it's got to be better than that, you know, what, the 90 seconds that they fought on Fox, like, last week. You know what I mean?
But Jimmy, I understand your point, too, because I was actually kind of surprised that they even put an MMA match on Fox. So I was kind of wondering how that would go.
That's what the question has been all week. Like, you know, would it have translated? Like, would it have hurt or helped? Like, would it have been one of them things where it's so brutal that everybody who was against it saying, see, I told you, or would have been a thing like, wow, that was exciting. So it could have went either way. We'll never know, but the 90-second knockout, you know, definitely wasn't what they were expecting.
Right. Well, let's talk about the some baseball real quick, because earlier in the week, the MLB and its players got together and nailed out a collective bargaining agreement in no time. I guess they're making the NFL and especially the NBA, you know, in these drastic, you know, economic times, they're kind of making them look silly and probably gaining a little bit as far as fan favor. But before we talk about it, I'm going to just throw out some of the highlights of the deal. Players will be required to play in the All-Star game unless injured or excused. Instant replay will be expanded to include decisions on foul lines and traps, subject to an agreement with umpires. Players, managers, and coaches may not use smokeless tobacco products during televised interviews and may not carry them in their uniforms. Players arrested for DWI will be required to undergo mandatory evaluation. Players will start wearing improved batting helmets manufactured by Rawlings in 2013. An initial positive test for HGH would result in a 50-game suspension, the same as the first positive urine test for a performance-enhancing substance. So what do you guys think about, I mean, besides all of those little tweaks to the rules, the Houston Astros will be moving, you know, it's official now, they'll be moving to the American League. So anybody got any thoughts on the new CBA in baseball?
Let me start off on this. Just one thing. I don't know if you guys mentioned it last week, but I think it's official now with the Houston Astros move. There's a one additional wild card team in each league.
Oh, yeah. I forgot to mention that. Yeah.
Yeah, there's now going to be that one-game playoff between the wild card teams in each league to see who gets that last spot, which is cool. I mean, it keeps people more interested or whatever.
I think it's only fair, really. I mean, baseball purists, you know, they want to keep the game the way it is. They don't even want one wild card. But, you know, if you have 32 teams, each team's playing 160 games, and then only, you know, four of them can make the playoffs in each conference, that's kind of,
It is, but then at the same time, if you can't decide who deserves to go in the playoffs after 162 games,
a lot of the people who get left out have great records. You know, so it's like letting, you know, another team in from each league. I don't think that's a terrible thing. I think that's pretty good, actually. I mean, that'll just make it harder for the Phillies to ever win one again, since we can't seem to get past the first round these days. But
yeah. Wow. I see both sides of it. There's nothing wrong with letting one in, but then I also see, like, yo, you can't figure out after all this time, then, you know, even if you have a good record, you didn't do enough, because y'all had 162,000 games to do it.
I'm you know, when it comes to baseball, I'm kind of like, you know, the Forrest Gump of the group here. But my question is, why do they play 162 games, man?
Because if they played 80 games, the numbers wouldn't be as great. And it's all about numbers in baseball.
Roy, why do they play 162 games?
No, Jimmy's right. That's the thing. Baseball is all about numbers, and people with baseball, they're like, you know, they're so, I mean, they used to play 154 or whatever, but people are so hung up on these numbers that it's like, you know, like you have to play some crazy amount of games that, I mean, look, nobody cares about baseball, you know, in like on August 10th. I mean, it's just, at that point in the season, it's just insane, like the number of games they play. But people, all these purists, as Jimmy said, are so intent on like these magical numbers in baseball that you have to play 150, 160 games for these numbers to mean anything.
Yo, that's a lot of games.
I don't mind adding some teams to the mix, man. I think a lot of teams deserve it. Even now, with the extra two, there's going to be a lot of teams deserving of a playoff berth in any other sport who's still not going to make it. But, you know, I'm cool where they're taking it now. You know, don't start adding some every CBA. You know, keep it here, see how that goes. One thing that they didn't address, unless, you know, I didn't hear about it, was how you get home field advantage in the World Series. You know, right now, the rule is whichever league wins the All-Star game, and I think that's probably the dumbest thing I've ever heard in sports. It makes no sense, and they still didn't address that. So I'm wondering why, you know, they're so pressed to keep this when they know that the sentiment for this is negative all around the country. Can anybody play devil's advocate and tell us why they may think that this is a good idea?
I'll play devil's advocate on this one. And the only reason they have it is because they want the All-Star game to mean something. Now is that something? I mean, look, the NBA All-Star game, NHL All-Star game, the Pro Bowl, nobody cares about those on any level. But there's some people care about the baseball All-Star game on some level because your team may be affected if your league wins. And that's the only reason why they have
this
rule. Stupid. I agree. It's the dumbest thing ever, but that's the only reason why they have it.
Does it make the All-Star game more competitive? And remember, my baseball IQ is 79, so it may be a dumb question.
But look, Austin, in regards to that question, you see in the new CBA, they're trying to force people to play in the game. So it actually didn't make much of a difference with players. Now they're saying, you know, unless you're injured or you have some other legitimate excuse, you have to play in the All-Star game. I mean, a lot of guys, I mean, from what we were just talking about with the wild cards, if only four teams from each league are going to make the playoffs anyway, most of the people, 80% of the people playing an All-Star
matter.
Game don't give a damn who has home field advantage because they don't have a shot. So what's the point? So I think that's probably why they're adding teams and that's why they're forcing people to play in it. They're going to see if they can finally make this thing work. But I think it's silly, man. I think it's silly. All right, so let's get into some, you know, we got the Philly conglomerate going on here. We got the Broad Street line in the building. So let's talk about some NBA, but let's talk about some 76ers news. You know, Nas told y'all this a few years ago, and it finally come to fruition. Hip-hop is dead. And if you don't know who we're talking about the Sixers mascot, the bunny rat, the diesel bunny rabbit with the do-rag on. I like to call him the thug bunny. Who I think they were trying to, you know, appease everyone of the Allen Iverson era in Philadelphia. He is no longer the Sixers mascot. Jimmy kind of spoke on it earlier in his PTR. Roy, what do you think of this? What do you think of hip hop
in general? You know what? Hip hop is whatever. I mean, people are, you know, they were up in arms about trying to get this bunny rabbit out here. Look, I don't care either way. If it's going, it's fine. I mean, look. If this team was winning, you can have the rabbit from like Donnie Darko out there, and nobody would care. If they were like instead of 41-41, if they were like 50-31, and if they won a first round series or whatever, I mean you can have actual rabbits at the arena. People don't care about things like this really. I mean the only thing team just needs to be competitive. You know what I mean?
Listen, here's my thing, right? Hip-hop, he's like reminiscent of an era, and now that they're changing, I think it's a good move to get rid of hip-hop. What I want to say is I want to start the campaign to bring Big Shot back. I don't know if you guys remember, as a kid, Big Shot was the mascot, and, you know, I have so many memories when it comes to Big Shot. I say they bring Big Shot back as an ode to the old Sixers. I mean, the championship Sixers, for that matter.
Maybe you can get some of those times back here. Actually, I'd say just go ahead and let the Philly fanatic pull double duty, and I'd be cool.
Cool with that, yeah. I want to know why AI can't get a run. But besides that, I'm cool with hip-hop being gone.
Well,
I mean,
we hear
that,
AI
that
looking for him. Maybe AI could be the mascot. I mean, he's looking for work.
True.
My man got to be the mascot. All right, but look, like we mentioned earlier, Roy and Chris had the Sixers' new CEO on their show this week. So did he address – I didn't get to listen to the – I know Jimmy listened to the interview. Did he address anything about hip-hop and anything else, you know,
with the
organization of going to change directions?
Well, he didn't address hip-hop specifically with us because we really didn't care because we don't really ask him about hip-hop. It's more about – I mean, I tried to ask him about the team and kind of what direction they were going to take – whether or not they were going to be aggressive in free agency or, you know, try to build through a draft or whatever. He couldn't answer anything because of a lockout, so I understand. But
Right now
they're just trying to focus on, like, the whole, like, the presentation, like, around the game, like, trying to build stuff up around the game, like, have events, you know, when you get down to the arena, like, have live music down at the arena or have, like, you know, like, post-game concerts or, you know, like, events, like, during, like, around the arena so that, you know, when you go down to a Sixers game, it's an event and not just a game. So that's what.
So basically, they're trying to get their Mark Cuban on, because I've been to a game in Dallas, and like you just said, it's an event. Well,
that really you can say that for the Mavericks and the Cowboys, but screw the Cowboys. You know, down in Cuban's house, you know, they have a live band. You know, it's just always something going on. It's always some noise being made, whether the team is on the court or not. So I think we could use, you know, a better atmosphere during the game, something to, you know, keep the crowd lively. What about the ticket prices? I heard that they were slashing ticket prices.
Yeah, it's on the individual tickets. They're going to cut basically like the price of 9,000 tickets by like 50%. So I think like lower level seats that were about, I think they were like $54 last year, they're going to be $29. And then there's a lot of seats in the upper level that are going to be like $15 and $20. Because basically, like, you know, I mean, he understands that, you know, you got to get people into the building. I mean, they were, you know, in the NBA, they were, you know, as far as percentage of seats filled, they were last in the NBA last season. So it's like,
I like these guys already. In comparison to a lot of other cities, the prices weren't bad in the first place. $54 and Washington, D.C. is going to get you on the third level, and they have three levels. It may get you on the second level, but their whole second level is like a club level. But to see a Washington Wizards game, you can pay in excess of $90 to sit on the first level, and their team hasn't been worth paying $90 for since Michael Jordan was there.
And he wasn't that good when he was. Wizards play, if I want to go to a Wizards game, they should pay me.
Sure.
Exactly. So I think, you know, they need to take some cues from that too. But I guess if people still come into the building, they're going to keep doing what they need to do, you know.
I like the moves they're making already. Like, they need to make, like, changes, and they're doing that. The question I have is, Roy, is there any chance of a Chick-fil-A or maybe another Chickie and Pete's being put in the arena?
you know, he didn't talk about specifics, but you know what? He's on Twitter. I don't know if you know. He's got a Twitter account and all that stuff. So just
okay.
They seem to be pretty reasonable about, you know, listening to feedback. So, I mean,
oh, no doubt. But when we get off later, shoot me his Twitter, because I'm going to straight ask him. Like, yo, we need a Chick-fil-A in the building.
On another note, fellas, have you heard that the owners and the players are back at the table and they need a handshake deal by the end of the weekend to get a season in play, 66 games from Christmas?
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. You know what the big deal is? They're trying not to miss those Christmas Day games. But, you know, they're back at the table trying to get, you know, trying not to have the lawyers involved, but, you know, the players, you guys were the ones who decided to decertify and get the lawyers involved. So it's getting tricky. I don't know what's going on. But I just hope that they do something, because I do need that Christmas Day basketball.
One thing was pointed out to me for me to be kind of pessimistic not overly optimistic is because the lawyers are involved and now the courts are watching. If one side reaches out to the other and the other side decides to say, FOH, we don't want to talk right now, that can be used in court as, you know, not wanting to negotiate in good faith. So just because they're going back to the table doesn't mean that deep down inside, one of the sides or even both, really, they could say, we really aren't here to negotiate. We're just here because we have to be. So I'm not as optimistic as I once would have been with them going back to the table. What are your thoughts, Roy?
No, I agree. It's like you said, though, but I think the way it comes down to it is that nobody wants to miss these Christmas Day games, because I think everybody knows that this is kind of like, I mean, and I know they don't want to talk to each other, but they know that if they miss Christmas, they're going to miss a lot of interest and a lot of revenue, like, to this league, because even, like, hardcore basketball fans like us, like, you know, like, we've been holding out, and then if they come back by Christmas, you know, we'll be upset, but we'll be fine. But I think, you know, whether it's, you know, court-mandated basically or not, they know that if they miss this Christmas deadline, then they know they're going to miss out a lot of the fan base for this season.
You know what? You bring up a good point too, Roy, and that is fan impression of the league overall and how it relates. I remember the lockout in '99, and I'm kind of juxtaposing the two, and the comparing and contrasting for me, I just feel like this lockout is different. I feel like public opinion and public interest in the game of professional basketball is kind of waning, whereas in 99 it wasn't. How do you guys feel?
I think that a lot has to do with the economic position of the country right now. Like I was saying earlier, we're going through hard economic times, but we have to watch these people who are pretty well off argue over $4 billion. So it's like sports, we kind of use that to, you know, to combat our problems.
And
you know,
it's kind of, just to kind of go along with that, I mean, I think people are kind of, they were kind of, you know, worn out by the whole NFL drama from this past summer.
Exactly. You just stole my next point. That's exactly it. It's a combination of both of those points. It's the economy overall and also everything that happened with the NFL. Like, after watching that, and now people are like, again, more educated in terms of sharing information. And, you know, you have outlets like, you know, social media that really wasn't as big in 99 as it is now, where people can share stories and information. And after going through the NFL lockout, and after seeing, you know, what happened to our economy going into fall, it's like, you know, it's actually a bad time to do what they're doing. And if nothing else, and you think it's, go ahead.
No, I was about to say, and I bet you that when Major League Baseball sat down at the table, probably the first thing that was said, open conversation was, all right, fellas, let's get this done. Let's take advantage of the fact that, you know, the NFL and the NBA has basically pissed off society. Let's get this done. Let's not get viewed in that light. You know, maybe we can steal a few fans in the process.
Yeah, Dev, that's a great point because in past times you wouldn't have viewed them as competitors, but now in this day and age, they're struggling for market share against one another. They're trying to capture market share. So there's an adversarial relationship.
24/7, 365. It's like when you watch now, they all have their own networks. They're selling, you know, they even show like people training and the practices. I mean, these sports have become 24/7, 365. So they are fighting for market share. And the NBA has to be like something fast, because if I see Luke Williams with another video on World Star Rap, I'm going to lose my mind. And then I was reading
24/7, 365, because you see baseball wait till damn near spring training to announce who the MVP was.
Yeah, how about that? And here's what's crazy, everybody. Listen, I was reading and they were saying how like the fastest growing sport is MMA, and after MMA, it's like the X Games. Some of those wild sports. They're some of the fastest growing sports, and a lot of reasons behind that is the perception of these modern day athletes, where even NFL, baseball, basketball, they're considered greedy athletes, you know.
Right.
When these other sports, these fringe sports, so to speak, have guys who compete for the love of the sport, which is why they're growing
right.
so fast in the current climate. People watch the X Games and they watch these fighters, and you know, even when you compare, say, MMA to boxing, the money's not the same, so. That's why the X Games and MMA and sports like that are growing so fast, is because of the perception of the modern day athlete.
Jimmy, you know what you did? You just
just
made two brilliant points that I absolutely agree with.
That's what I do. I'm nice.
That you do. You are. That take me back to our discussion last week, where I was saying that the players, when the fans can no longer relate to the players, the sport is dead. So the perception from a fan's perspective is the owners, yeah, they're the nasty guys, but I never could relate to a billionaire. But you as a player, whether it's true or not, perception is that the players come from amongst the fans. And that's why with MMA and with X Games, you feel like they're, you know, he's one of us. They can no longer do that with football.
I hear a lot of people often, like with that sentiment, who are like really upset and they're ready to just, say, to hell with the NBA, like, whether they come back or not. And, I mean, it is crazy that fans get to that point, because I can't get to that point, not even just because we do this for a living now, but I just can't get to that point. I'm a sellout. I'm a line crosser. I mess up the picket lines. When they come back, I'm going to be in front of the TV, happy, watching some ball. So,
in our chat room, shout out to Corey Camp. He's in our chat room. He said that if there is no Christmas Day game, the league is going to fold like a tent, because the sponsors get off on selling their product on that day and during these games. And without those sponsors, that's less revenue. That's one of the, you know, that's where they collect a lot of money in terms of, you know, the sponsors paying them for that day. So, you know, if they miss Christmas, what else, like, how are they going to make that money up?
I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if that week, that Christmas week, that the NBA makes nine figures in revenue easy.
Oh, wow.
Easy.
Yeah, they definitely can. They got to do something. They definitely have to do something, you know.
All right, well, what's going on today, Jimmy, in the NFL, man? Let's see what's going on in the NFL right now.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's move on, talking about this basketball, because it's kind of making everybody sad because we all missed it. Let's talk some football, yo. First thing I want to ask you guys about is this. You know he's not one of my favorite players.
Who is that?
But the Chicago Bears, to be honest, have been a red hot team. But now their quarterback has thumb surgery, and they're saying he may miss the rest of the regular season. Some are saying that he may come back at the end of the regular season. But how will this affect the Bears overall? I mean, are they done? Can they hold the fort now with Caleb Haney? Or what's your opinions on this? And I ask you first, Roy, what is your opinion on one Jay Cutler going down?
I think the Bears are kind of done. Because he wasn't the zombie Jay Cutler this year. He was actually pretty good. You know, he was kind of
holding the
running
game. Down.
Yeah, he's got a running game. That kind of helps out a little bit.
Isn't it amazing how great quarterbacks look when they get a running game? It's like you take a quarterback that's like look like an average quarterback. You give him a running game, it's like a different player.
They also giving him a little more time than they did in the first 5 weeks of the season, too.
they made adjustments. Yes, they did. Started with the Eagles.
Pinata. But go ahead, Roy.
Yeah, and they played the Eagles, exactly. But Haney, I mean, he was okay last year in the playoffs. I mean, he wasn't when Cutler got hurt last year. He was all right. But I don't think even with that new running or that better running game, I don't think he's good enough to kind of hold the fort down.
Gotcha. Austin, you got any fans?
I think the Bears are frauds because we lost our bet. to be completely honest, I think it's up in the air because I think a lot of times fans and even we, the media, we get so caught up in offense that we discount the value of defense. And the Bears defensively have been good enough to hold teams to low scores. And when you have a great defense that can hold the score down, you always give yourself a chance to win. So if you can bring Jay Cutler back in, say, 4 weeks, that's an accelerated timeline. I mean, that's the earliest they say it's possible for him to come back. And he can play somewhere close to the level he was playing before he went out. I think they give themselves a chance. What are they, 7-3 now?
Yeah.
Can they win three more games with and without Jay Cutler? Yeah, they can. But I don't know how productive they'll be in the playoffs. That's the real question.
Yeah, see, now my feeling, I actually tried to speak to, a few Bears fans. I spoke to JT from Ranked Top 5 in Chicago. They seem pretty confident in Caleb Haney, but I kind of think that they're taking his appearance in that playoff game, and I think they're showing a little too much confidence in it. It's not going to be the same thing. The team, especially after this week, they're going to have some film on Caleb Haney. They're going to get to see what he does well, what he doesn't do well, and teams are going to try to capitalize off of that. I can't sit here and say that he's good enough to keep the Bears playing at the level that they were playing at because, as Roy said earlier, Cutler is having, a pretty good year. So I don't know if I want to go as far as to say they're done, but the race in the NFC is starting to tighten up, so... I don't know, man. It doesn't – I wouldn't say they're totally done, but it really doesn't look good unless, Cutler can come back earlier than expected. He can come back playing the same level that he was playing on already.
You know how Bears fans are, though. It doesn't matter anyway. Like,
yeah, they're kind of homeless.
Once they lose a couple games and don't make the playoffs, all they're going to do is start talking about Jim McMahon and Walter Payton.
Exactly.
Chicago fans won't let 85 go. I told y'all think I'm joking. I honestly believe that if the Bears won the bowl this year, it wouldn't even matter. They'd still be talking about 85.
And that's another thing. They have a very, very good defense, but the defense isn't dominant like it was in their last Super Bowl appearance. So I don't know if they're good enough, with the quarterback not playing at the level that, Cutler was. I don't know if they're good enough to just carry that team throughout the rest of the season.
In our chat room, Corey makes another point. He said the defense and offenses are complementary. He says without Jay, the defense is going to kind of wear out. They were playing with
right.
lead
well,
a lot of those games
point.
And could tee off. And he said you can't
right.
tee off
good
if
point.
You're in a 10-7 game.
Exactly, because that's when guys mm-hmm. like Peppers get to shine because you got the lead, the other team has to pass, and then Peppers all over the quarterback.
Good
no
point.
Doubt.
Great point.
Definitely
you
great
know
point.
What, Jeff, you alluded to another
everything.
Good point, and I want to ask you guys a question. Do you know the difference between the average NFL quarterback and a good NFL quarterback?
Running game.
Running
game. Stand upright.
What's on your mind? You tell us.
Film. An average NFL quarterback with no film can come in and look
like a good one.
Good to great. But when you get film and you give an NFL defense and an NFL coordinator time to scheme, plan, and grab tendencies, what happens? Well, shout out to Michael Vick. All right, let's go.
In the words of AI, cats with some weirdo tendencies get found with a magazine. You know how that is. Once they get that film, that's it. It's so flat. Anyway, let's move on from there. Let's talk about Vince Young and his dream team.
No,
the
not.
Recap of the Giants game.
Dream team.
What do you think about the defense? How they stepped it up with Vince Young at quarterback?
Yo, we went back to the spirit of Buddy Ryan, like, entered their bodies and had them playing in a different zone, a different year.
I was proud of them dudes, man.
Yo,
I was
they
proud
ball.
Of them. I don't think that they can duplicate that effort too often, but I was proud of what I saw that night, man. And for those who don't know, Nnamdi was carted off with a knee injury at practice today, so who knows what's going to happen with
I
that.
I heard someone at practice, somebody came and lied to him. They was like, yo, Victor Cruz just got traded to the Patriots.
He didn't want to get his ass salted on again, huh?
He was like, what? You know what? I'm going to check out this week.
Then,
yo,
what I do when I see Victor Cruz and Nnamdi
during the game. And you were talking about how the defense is coming along over the weeks. Like, they looks like they're getting better from week to week. They're showing improvement from week to week in this new system. And do you guys think that's what it is? Or do you think it was like, any major changes made? Or do you think it's just a matter of time before they come together?
I believe that. But when I said it, I was told I was speaking too soon.
No, I'm asking, Roy, what do you think? Do you think they're coming together?
No, I still think you got to kind of wait and see. I think it's kind of like one of those things where it's like, it's one of those, like, just going off to B. Austin's point. I mean, the Eagles and, Juan Castillo, I know he coached the offensive line last year, but, I mean, it's one of those situations. I think they just had a lot of film on Eli, and Eli lit them up for 4 touchdowns in that first game. So I think they kind of went back and said, all right, what are we doing wrong? We got to put our guys in better positions to make plays. And I think it was one of those situations where they just, ran into a guy they kind of were familiar with. Now, this week against Brady, especially, with Nnamdi kind of up in air, if they pull out that same kind of effort this week, then I think they kind of turn the corner.
Yeah. No, like, I agree. I think the offensive line and the defense, I think throughout the weeks they've gotten better. I just didn't think that, it was time to jump out there and kind of for anybody to beat their chest who was in support of Juan Castillo. I never thought that everything was his fault in the first place. I think people...
Well, no.
We about it last year. We knew people weren't going to give him a chance just because he was coming from the other side of the ball in the first place. So the first time the defense looked subpar, they were going to take their shots at him. They have come off the wide nine. They don't do it. They don't run that as much. Like first and second downs or on running downs. When they maybe think that it's going to be a running play, they bring those guys in and help out the linebackers a little bit more now. So that little tweak in the system has caused them to be a little better against the run. I also don't think they're good, but I still think the linebackers have been playing better, especially the little dude's role. Like, he's playing like his life is on the line.
Yeah. I see talent in those guys where I didn't see talent in Moise Foku and Clay Matthews' son. I didn't see it. You know, like looking at Roll and looking at Chaney, I think we have something, you know, down the line that could be more than just serviceable. Now, for me, we have the benefit of some insider information, and we also know the story of Washburn kind of freelancing and Rogan and doing his own thing with the D-line, and then having Juan Castillo kind of just thrown into the mix. So I think things are coming together on the defensive side of the ball, and I've spent the last 6 months of my life telling any and everyone who would listen that our linebackers are the equivalent of Larry, Manny, and Mo. So,
yo,
you know, to see them,
it's funny.
To see them come
in
together.
In our chat room, Corey Campagnetti says, all the other Matthews are borderline Hall of Famers. They would be the Eagles if they get the one that
picks. It's only right, man. It's only right. But
yeah,
that's one thing about your point, Bielsa, about the linebackers getting a little bit better. Well, you're saying you see talent and we may have something down the line. See, that might not fly in Philly, though, because linebacker has been a position for so long that it just seems like Andy and the rest of the organization refuses to address.
We can
flash at linebacker. We don't need any
more. Right. No,
it looks like that. Like, Asuru Bradley was down the line. Gokong was down the line. Now those guys are gone, and we're looking down the line again while running backs are gashing us for 5 yards of carry. So
We need to trade Nnamdi and his whole family and his in the kingdom of Zamunda for Patrick Willis.
You know, it's funny. I found it interesting, too. They were talking about Castillo. I was reading in the local paper. They were saying that they were asking him about the struggles in the beginning of the season. And when they asked him this, like, yo, he's an Andy Reid stan. They said, dude, start tearing up and, like shed some tears talking about he was just so mad that he let Andy down. I was like, damn.
Yo, people like Andy, man. That's what Philly
Yo,
man.
Andy.
But the
Andy,
people who
Andy said, in his own right has a following.
Boy said that he didn't care about the score. He was just upset that he let Andy down. I was like, yo. So, you know.
Let's get to the game. Let's get to the game.
Hey, Roy, what did you think of Vince Young's performance?
You know what? Vince gave you what I think you kind of wanted, like what you kind of expect out of a backup quarterback. I mean, like your backup.
I didn't
quarterback,
want three picks.
Well, I mean, that's three picks. But I mean, like well, all right, let me take it back. Like you know, you don't typically expect your backup quarterback to come in and kind of light the world on fire. I mean, Vince was, I think he was what, like six? I think it was 16 and 19 on the short passes. I mean, he was terrible throwing down the field. And two of them, those interceptions were horrible. But I mean, he didn't put you out of the game, even though those interceptions were kind of that. Well, the one interception in red zone was kind of a killer. He didn't kill you.
Giants didn't put us out of the game.
I don't think I don't think you could expect a whole lot more out of. You could have expected a whole lot more out of Vince Young last week.
I agree with that. I would agree with that had he been the starter. You know, he doesn't have to be the backup for me not to expect much from him. But, you know, what? One thing that he did give you that we are not used to seeing in Philly, not with Vic, not with Donovan, when the game was on the line, Vince Young marched that team down the field. What would he have? What did he have, six first downs in that drive?
What did he do during Tebow time?
Down the field and scored when we had to score in Tebow time, like Jimmy just said. Had that been Vic, because we've seen it the last 3 or 4 weeks, you can just call it. It'd have been a wrap. If it had been McNabb, he would have probably just gone three and out. So
now, Roy,
props to
we
Vince,
pride ourselves. We pride ourselves here on the War Room on our knowledge of the game, and we will include you in that. And so we're gonna keep it real funky right now. Yo, Vince has a propensity to lead clutch drives. He does have clutch. A clutch meter, a high clutch meter for a bum.
Got to get his regular.
One of the things that we have to acknowledge, if you don't throw the ball to the other team three times, then there's no need for Tebow time. There's no need to be clutch.
True. He should have been blown
because our defense did what it wanted with the midgets. So why turn the ball over three times? We don't turn the ball over three times. I give us at least another 7 points, if not 14. And not 10,
maybe,
I'll call it 10.
Maybe Vince is just trying to make it exciting for you. Go ahead.
Let me ask this question, though. I'm just curious, like if Michael Vick, and you know, not to, you know, Vince Young did what he was supposed to do, but if a healthy Michael Vick was in that game, would it have been 10-10 at the end of the game? Like, would there have been that drive at the end? You know, where we needed Vince to pull it out in Tebow time. Like, would Michael Vick have done? You know, would he have?
Vick would have threw a pick in Tebow time. The game would have been. Michael Vick wouldn't have won that game, yo.
Vince Young is a healthy Michael Vick, we might not have been in Tebow time in the first place.
Right.
Yeah, and I kind of, if that's the point you're making, I kind of agree, not because I think Michael Vick is great, because everybody knows, you know, what I think about Michael Vick overall. But if you put Michael Vick in that situation, you know, he knows the offense.
We score more
better.
Points.
And you have the defense playing that way, that game never gets to Tebow time.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's the point.
You know,
that is exactly.
The defense can be playing that way because Vince Young is such a leader, he pumped the defense up.
True. Vince Young got those tackles.
Yeah, that's one thing. Mike Vick doesn't really get the benefit of the defense balling out of their minds like they did last
mm-hmm.
week. So I am curious to see him
defense,
behind
the
center when
plays
the defense,
better, the defense
like
plays
that.
Better for Vince Young. They believe in Vince
listen,
Young.
Listen, they see, listen, listen,
they,
they
Vince
see
Young
what
awesome
Vince
stuff.
Young,
that's
they see what Vince Young does in practice. So they got together in their defensive meeting. They said, listen, we know this guy ain't shit, so we got to go out here and do what we got to do. Because this is not going to be cute. And your man VY, see, I call him VY Jelly. Your man VY Jelly is going to yo, he had a couple Jamarcus Russells. Did y'all see the Jamarcus Russells? He was throwing the ball to no one.
Yeah. Hey, Roy,
you said VY Jelly. Hold
Domingo.
On, let's move this conversation before I talk about today's game. I want to send a shout out to another one of our sponsors, Stitcher Smart Radio. You can now hear us, the War Room, on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your computer, your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phone. And if you still have a BlackBerry or Palm phone, go out tomorrow on Good Friday and get a new one, or just go Vince Young yourself. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed and no memory or storage wasted. Downloading is easy. Click on the Stitcher logo on our website, warroomsports.com, and listen, or download to your mobile phone directly from that page, Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. And now let's talk about today's game. As the Cowboys just win their game on a last-second field goal, they win 20-19, you know. So let's talk about today's game. Did you guys see the early game? Let's start. First of all, let's start with the Packers-Lions game and the dirty player, Ndamukong Suh.
I asked you guys earlier in the season if this dude was dirty. There was something wrong with him.
I
he's
just,
on his way to being
I can't defend him no more. I can't defend him no more.
Yeah.
You know what? You like a dirty streak in your defensive tackle, but they're like, yo, come on, cuz.
Yeah.
And you know what's crazy about it? He gets up on the microphone. And he's articulate, and, you know, he gets his big words on. The bottom line with him is I think he believes the hype, and he wants to be perceived as the bully, as the bad guy. And so he goes out and he plays that way. So,
and the thing is, a few weeks ago, he just went to the league to try to get an understanding of what he's doing that they're considering dirty.
Well,
what
he probably had
today.
An articulate conversation with Goodell. He didn't go in there sounding like Chris Johnson.
Yeah, there's still no gray area today. I mean, he just stomped the dude in his chest like
banged his head three times, stood up and stomped on him.
on our Facebook page, Len Hickman, he says that he thinks it was roid rage.
Well, Len Hickman would know.
Hey, look, Austin said that. I didn't say that. Roy, what did you think about Ndamukong Suh and his, even though we didn't get into the game yet, what do you think about his performance and how he on Thanksgiving embarrassed his entire family?
That was dirty, but I don't know if you saw the article on ESPN. He said he didn't even stomp him. He said he was trying to get his balance. So that's how he got his brain. So that's how he explained, like, putting his cleat, like, into the guy's into the guy's arm. I mean, he's trying
So now, Roy, this is B. Let me pose it to you this way. Now, not only is he dirty, but he's going to insult my intelligence too. So now you think you're a smart guy. Now you think you're intelligent.
Yeah,
you think you're smarter.
He took his head and like slammed it to the ground like four times.
Remember when Haynesworth stomped Andre Garay's head? Yeah. don't go down the Haynesworth path. Come on.
No, the bull just lied to me and said, I'm trying to get my balance.
Well, let me ask you guys a question now. With all that being said, you want him on your team, wouldn't you? With all that, all those issues.
Of course.
Yo, there's something about being a defensive tackle that kind of makes that cool. And I know I shouldn't say that, but it's like you want a nasty streak in your defensive tackle, yo. Like if that was your running back.
He's a Buddy Ryan guy. He's a Buddy Ryan type guy.
Yo, Buddy Ryan would hug
and
kiss him. No homo.
Like deny a Buddy Ryan type guy, man, go lean out the third floor window and just fall. Like, come on.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, with all that being said, what did you think about the game?
I think the Lions rolled over.
I think the Lions need to go see the Wizard after that game.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, this is one of those things. Actually, I had to be kind of in and out on the game. But from the point of the game where I was, you know, watching every snap, Green Bay didn't seem too dominant. They didn't seem like the dominant team they've been, or at least the dominant offense they've been, you know, throughout the whole season. But the Lions just seem to keep giving them opportunities to, you know, to beat them. And it goes back to what I said in my PTR this year and exactly 365 days ago. Why are we subjected to watching the Detroit Lions on television every year while we're eating our Thanksgiving dinner? I don't or getting ready for it. I don't understand.
I'm gonna get on your train, Dez. Because I gave the boy Stafford the benefit of the doubt. Yeah, he's not good. He's not good. He just has weapons. He's not good.
A couple of them were tips. Like, they were tip balls. They weren't his fault.
Jimmy,
directly,
he's not good.
Know.
He's not good. He's not good.
You don't think it's a broken finger?
No, he's not good.
And he's missing like a tip off of his finger or something crazy like that.
Ronnie Lott didn't need a finger. So,
true.
I mean,
he ain't played quarterback, though.
Yeah, good point. No, he's not good.
No, I always kind of thought, I still think he's a good young quarterback. I just think these days, you know, you do anything positive, they're giving him too much too soon. He's not as good as they try to make him out to be. You know, at the end of last year and throughout the first part of this year. But he has promise. And working, like Jimmy said, with weapons, working with who he's working with, you know, that can make it a lot easier for him. So, but, yeah, in big situations like this, because everybody in the media seemed to drink the Lions Kool-Aid this week as having the best chance to derail the Packers' undefeated season. And I just didn't understand why everybody was drinking that Kool-Aid, and, you know, the Lions just proved
it. Because,
right.
You know what, it just seemed like one of the things where it just set up that way. I picked the Packers in our pick'em pool, but it just seemed like one of them storybook things where it sets up that way, where the team is coming together,
yeah.
And now they get a chance. 40, you know what I'm saying?
Because 42 years ago they did it or something.
I don't think the Lions are coming together. Compared to how they played early in the season, I think the Lions are unraveling a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have to keep on our page are the Lions
also.
And the Bills who we thought they were.
I'm going to go on the record here also and say that Green Bay's defense is better than they are ranked and better than people say they are. And that's a lot of the yardage is because of their offense. Their offense is so efficient and scores so quickly that teams are already down, so they have to throw against them.
Exactly.
And they put up so many points that they're on the field all the time, but they force major turnovers, and they are they're big play artists. They make big plays, and you don't score that much on.
So you're saying basically the offense is making the defense look bad because of the level that they're playing on.
Yeah, because they got the Michael Jordan, Chris Paul of quarterbacks, they scoring like. They score. Well, Duke can't even throw. Duke can't throw over 400 yards because they score so much that he doesn't need to throw that. It's crazy.
Right. Ever since they started hyping up this whole back shoulder pass, I never really drank the Kool-Aid on it. I always thought the quarterbacks did that by mistake. and got props for completing those passes because the receiver adjusted on a bad pass that the corner didn't see. Dude is one of the few. There's maybe three quarterbacks in the league who does it on purpose. I think dude is the best at it. It's crazy.
I think Aaron Rodgers can hit you in your eye at 30 yards coming across.
Like I told y'all when the season started, Aaron Rodgers has a particular
has
set,
a particular
skills, which
set
him,
of skills,
which make him great at what he does, yo.
Yeah.
He's that guy. But, you know, in terms of the other game, did you guys get to see any of this game, this Cowboys game before we got on?
Yeah.
Tony Romo.
What I was telling you. Because if you look at the final score, they lost on the last play, you know, on a field goal. What did I say earlier? I'm like, Miami was leaving too many points on the field. Tony Romo
yep.
turned the ball over twice in the first few possessions of the game. Matter of fact, he threw two interceptions, like, at one point. It was like his last three attempts. He had two interceptions. They got great field position on their first three drives, and they only came out of it with about 3 points. So I kind of knew Miami was setting themselves
back
up to be bitten in the butt later on in the game, and it obviously happened.
The difference between a good team and Miami Dolphins, leaving too many points on the field.
You know what, though? I'll be in Miami December 11th for the Eagles game, and I guarantee they're going to beat us. It's just going to happen that way. Everybody else is going to take advantage of the Dolphins. We're going to be that third, fourth team that they just whack. Like, nah, it's going to beat the Dolphins. We're the dream team.
We got our own problems with one Tomas Brady on Sunday. Man.
Can we win that game? Roy, you think
no.
we can win that game?
No.
Just flat
no.
out, no. Nah, not
hey, Austin, to your point in our chat room, Corey makes a point. He says that he thinks that Matthew Stafford is like Dante Culpepper, and when they took away Moss, he got exposed. And if you take away Calvin Johnson, his career will be like Dante Culpepper's.
He ain't that bad.
Well, Stafford is exposing himself. I don't know, man. Culpepper, you know, if Peyton Manning didn't have that year that he had, we'd be talking about Dante Culpepper's record-breaking year. So,
we'd be talking about Tom
Stafford might not be as good
as year.
Yeah,
I'm not
trying to tell you, Austin, that he's good or great.
I'm just saying
that, you know, don't give Stafford credit for being better than him yet. Because Stafford is proving he might be exposing himself, and he still has Calvin Johnson.
Yeah, he still has. Dante Culpepper is not, I wouldn't call him garbage. I would probably take him over the guy that started for the Eagles for 11 years. I don't know. I think they're about a tie. But at that particular time when he had Randy, yo, dude didn't call no plays.
That's not saying much. You probably would take Achilles Smith over in Mach 5.
Even after what he knows about Achilles Smith.
All that, he would take Achilles Smith over Mach 5.
Yo, you could just throw the ball up to Randy. And it was going to happen. I never saw anything like Randy, man. Let's move on, man, before I get into my Randy reminiscence.
Let's spend some time talking about this upcoming game, and you know, in terms of it being a triple header now. First off, what do you think about the triple header on Thanksgiving? Do you like that?
Love it.
Or do you think the game starts to grow?
No, I like it because, you know, a lot of times on Thanksgiving, if you're like me, and I'm sure most of you guys are, you're not doing anything. You're not helping. You're not doing any of the cooking. I'm talking, when the early game starts, you know, so you're sitting around basically waiting for your Thanksgiving meal. So that's that waiting game. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
the second game is the game that you watch while you're eating. If your dinner is set up that way, which ours was, you know, we sat with tray tables and watched the game. And this last game, it's like, you know, you get to digest, you know. It's like your dessert game. So
dessert.
I like it a lot.
After the day, though, see, the problem with me, though, is after the morning, I'm, like, sleep by the time the last game come on. I got the item. But I do like the early game because I need something to do while, like, waiting for the yams. I hate waiting for the yams, even when it's not Thanksgiving. But anyway, it's like.
I told the girl that myself.
It's just like the early game is good, but let's talk about this last game. We're going to call this the Harbaugh Bowl because the brothers
Harbaugh.
For the
yams, I'm married. Oh, my bad.
Yo, first off, NFL, they're slick. They're going to make these two dudes play on Thanksgiving. That was set up. But what do you guys think about this game? Who needs the game more?
I didn't know how I was bitching about it.
Well, that's the Ravens need right the game more.
I was about to say, the 49ers are about to win the division tonight if they win the game. So they don't need the next three games. They don't need
the
next three.
If the Packers slip up, they have a shot to, you know,
You know what? Seriously, in my opinion, I think that the Niners are now the odds-on favorite to get the number one seed because they have a lot of games left against their division. So for everybody, because I had a hard time believing in the 49ers, but for everybody who did doubt the 49ers and said that they're doing this because of the division they play in, they haven't even played a bunch of division games.
Nope.
They were beating everybody outside of the division. Now they're going to finish the season beating up on those guys. And they might end up getting the number one seed.
And their style of football is, like, conducive to the playoffs. They play that playoff-type
hard
football.
Nose. Mm-hmm. They take the ball out of Alex Smith's hands to win the game.
But they stop the run. Green Bay doesn't run. So they're going to have to shore up that pass defense. If they're
and they got
Green
Carlos Rogers as their number one corner. And he's not better than me.
Yo,
always gets Carlos. I never thought Carlos was bad. He just can't catch.
Alex Smith hasn't thrown 300 passes yet, and, like, Rodgers had that, like, week four. Like, yo.
Alex Smith hasn't thrown 300 passes in his career.
But guess what, though? When it comes time for him to make a play, he's making the plays.
Tebow
and that's what's
time.
Amazing is there's so many things. Like, if he played with Harbaugh coming out, who knows how his career would have been. There's so many things that happen with the quarterback that could change, like, how his career
goes.
Yeah,
no, you're right. And I've always been one.
Yeah.
I make fun of Alex because it's, you know, it's enjoyable and it gets the giggles and the laughs. But I've never really pooped on Alex. I've thought you have to consider his situation. Seven seasons, six different coordinators, and a horrific offensive line perennially. So I've never thought that he's had really a chance. But then you stack him up as to where he was drafted and you know that, you know, Metalark Lemon was drafted in that class. So it's like you compared it to, and he gets the short end of the stick because of all of those things.
So would
but
you take Alex Smith
horrible.
Over Matthew Stafford? Would you take him over Matthew Stafford?
Nah, I wouldn't.
You think he's a bum then? You just call Stafford a bum. So you think
I don't think Stafford's a bum.
I thought Stafford was on the way to being special. I think it has a lot to do with experience and age.
Yeah.
I think Alex Smith can hold down the offense of a good team right now just because of the amount of years he has in. I think you put Stafford in a situation where he has as much experience as Smith, he'll be a much better quarterback. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
Now,
just to buttress that point, that's kind of like the shooter in basketball. If you know you are a good shooter, you take a higher degree of difficulty shots, like Melo and LeBron. Like, Melo is a pure shooter. So he's going to take harder shots. LeBron's just going to bow you over and get to the rim. So his field goal percentage is going to be higher. same with Alex Smith and Stafford. Stafford is the better pure passer. Alex knows his limitations.
Yeah.
Right.
That's the right way. It's kind of hard to kind of weigh the two guys because, I mean, Alex Smith is throwing to Calvin. I mean, Matthew Stafford's throwing to Calvin Johnson, which kind of skews it a little bit. I mean, like, we know, like, you know, we kind of know who Alex Smith is, but if Alex Smith was thrown to a better receiving core, you know, I mean, Michael Crabtree is not nothing to write home about yet, but, I mean, if he was thrown to a Calvin Johnson, I mean, you know, you might have a different opinion on Alex Smith, but, I mean, B. Austin's right. I mean, I always compare Alex Smith to another guy, like Jason Campbell, like another guy who just kind of came in the league, but, like, every year he had a different head coach, different coordinator.
Right.
Jason Campbell is still catching bad breaks.
Exactly. You know what? Jason Campbell, it started for him even before he got to the league.
He had different coordinators in Auburn.
Like,
yeah.
His whole career has just been, I don't know.
He's like a dude who's been on a single-parent home whose mom dates a lot.
Well, let me ask you guys a question. In our chat room, they brought up a point. They said the 49ers got hoes. They had to travel three time zones on a short week. Do you think that'll have any effect on the game?
No,
yep.
Stop the excuses.
No, I do.
Okay, break it down.
All right. Well, I mean, this is because they said this is the first time since they had this this Sunday, this this Thursday night, the three-night Thanksgiving thing, that a team had to travel three time zones for like the late Thanksgiving game. And I think it's kind of, you know, teams traveling, you know, west coast to east, you know, on a short week, you know, it kind of throws you off. I mean,
yeah,
it's probably going to throw the Eagles off.
Jet lag is
probably going to throw the Eagles off next week, too.
People might not realize it, but jet lag is a real thing.
It definitely is real. Last Thursday, I told you, I said, yo, I'm picking the Broncos just because the Jets got hosed. They played a Sunday night game, which ended like past 12. Didn't have to play Thursday, like, you know, traveling across country, had to play Thursday. I was like, yo, and you can tell in the beginning of the game they were playing very lethargic. That jet lag is real, and,
on,
you
man.
Know, this happened.
You picked them because they got Tebow. Come on, man.
I mean, that's part of it, too. Yeah, I mean, Tebow Chiefs as well. You know, Chiefs as well. But I'm just saying, like, but still, like, that jet lag is real. So, you know, but then again, like we said before, the type of ball that the Niners play.
Man, there's coffee, there's caffeine, there's taurine, there's methamphetamine,
that.
There's cocaine. Stay awake.
Yeah, and also there's another point that chat makes. If travel time didn't matter, they wouldn't have divisions. That's the point of having divisions, to try to, like, you know, have regions or what have you, to make the travel easier.
Well,
they're just
trying in the last few years to make the divisions actually make some kind of sense. Some
you
of them, you know,
lied,
the rivalries are so historic, you can't move them. Like Dallas Cowboys
Explain
and the NFC East.
Explain to me
East, how,
the make Phoenix sense. Cardinals, how the Phoenix Cardinals played in the NFC East.
They were just throwing teams in, man. Like, they
yo, remember that?
Kind of
when they had
the
Neil Lomax in them?
Yeah, and it was easy to move them because they stunk, and those rivalries didn't mean anything to anybody. But,
yeah.
And they
but
had
anyway,
a
so
kicker who became their quarterback.
Yo, those Cardinals.
Yeah, would the Cardinals even be relevant without Kurt Warner?
No.
I mean,
I don't think they're relevant.
Yeah, exactly.
That was a flash in the pan.
It did beat the Eagles, though.
The Eagles ain't relevant.
Yeah, the Eagles not relevant. Let's get you guys thoughts and predictions for the last game, the big game, like the Hardball Bowl. Dev, break down what do you think about the game, and also who do you think is going to win and why?
Well, like we mentioned before, the 49ers are at a disadvantage because they have to travel to Baltimore, you know, travel a few time zones from last week, blah, blah, blah. Baltimore is in a position where they're in a race with the Steelers. I don't really count the Bengals in that because I think the cream is going to rise to the top in that division, or should I say the rest of the junk is going to fall to the bottom. But I do think Baltimore needs this game more. I've heard a lot of people in the last week say that they think Jim Harbaugh is a better coach than John Harbaugh. I don't know how you can make that assessment after just 10 games. So I'm not even going to try to say who's the better coach, but I just think Baltimore, welcoming them into their house on Thanksgiving, needing the game a little more than San Francisco does, I think they're going to find a way to pull it out.
Yeah.
Is Ray back?
Also
is Ray Lewis back this week?
No, he's out.
He's out.
Okay.
He's out.
Maybe they should at least let him, like, break the team down, though. They should let him break
let
the
him
team
come
down
out the
even
tunnel.
If he's not playing.
He's yeah. Come out the
like,
tunnel,
here's
like,
the thing, though.
Beating up
Baltimore
a turkey.
Baltimore seems to play to the level of their competition. Like, if they're playing a good team, they play that way. And, you know, then they lose to the Jacksonville Jaguars of all teams. Like, you know,
almost
they play to the level
the
of their competition.
Yeah,
so it's
have
like
a frantic comeback to beat the Cardinals.
And that's what I'm saying. They play to the level of their competition. So with that being said, this is a big game. And I don't know, but again, I hate picking against the Niners because of the type of ball they play. They're going to always be in a game.
And the fact
but
that
at the end of the day,
7-1.
yeah, that too.
I'm sorry.
That
what
too,
are they? What are they now?
Eight and,
probably
8-1.
8-1, probably.
8-1.
Yeah. So like, and
they 8-1. Last time I seen them 8-1, they had like younger Montana. But you know, I think I may lean towards Baltimore. I may change my mind before we go off air, but right now I'm leaning towards Baltimore just because, like you said, the 49ers had the disadvantage. And also, the Ravens played to the level of their competition. B. Austin, what are your thoughts?
Are y'all sure that my uncle's not playing?
He's inactive.
because I don't pick against my uncle. If he's inactive, then I'm picking the Niners. If he was active, I'd just abstain.
Baltimore has to stop the run to be successful. Because like you
Francis,
were saying earlier,
yo,
like, a lot
Francis
of stuff that Ali
H.
Smith
Gore
did is a, yeah, it's a result of what they're doing on the ground game. So if you stop the run, you can pretty much, you know, not do what you want to do against the Niners because their defense is still tough. But, you know, you stop that and their offense might struggle. So you think Baltimore is going to stop the run without Ray Ray?
Nah. I'm taking the Niners. Frank White, yo, Frank White is nice.
Frank White Gore.
Roy, what is your opinion of this game, Roy?
I gotta agree with you and Dev. I don't see the Niners pulling this out for the reasons we kind of talked about before. And you're right though. The Ravens do play back to their level of competition. I mean, I'm looking over their schedule and like their last like five games. I mean, they had, you know, like Cincinnati, they barely beat. They lost to Seattle. You know, they barely beat Pittsburgh, barely beat Arizona, and then lost to the Jaguars. I mean, they come out flat a lot, but the fact that they're home, kind of, I'm going to lean towards them because they're home, and you know, they're going to face a Niners team coming in off a short week. So,
hey Roy, you know why a lot of that stuff happens? Why they play down to their competition? Because their quarterback is another one of the ones who got too much too early, and he is very overrated.
Yeah,
I think Joe Flacco is very overrated.
So now at this point you're taking Matt Ryan over Joe?
I think it's a situation where cats like Matt Ryan, Joe Flacco, Matthew Stafford, I think they're all overrated. Of the bunch, Matt Ryan, in my opinion, is the best one. Flacco, he shows flashes. I mean, sometimes like you look at him, you're like, does he know how to play football? And then other moments, you know, he's connecting with Torrey Smith on long bombs to get my fantasy team some points because I got Torrey Smith. And, you know, all well in the world. But sometimes I just don't understand what Flacco is seeing on the other side of the ball. I don't think he understands what he's seeing.
Here's the bottom line. The bottom line with all of it is it's like three good quarterbacks in the whole league. And, I mean, that's just the bottom line. You got some guys who are above average, some guys who are average. There's like three good quarterbacks in the whole league. And if you look at, like, the history of the league, like I've always brought up, it's always been that way with the exception of, like, the 83 draft when you had some Hall of Famers come out. Other than that, it's always only a handful of quarterbacks that's good. That's just what it is.
You can still count Peyton in that, even though he's relaxed.
Yeah, he might win MVP, like, without playing this year. That'll be the most gangster thing ever.
Now, so do any of you guys, I mean, because I didn't want to make a judgment on it that quick, but that doesn't stop you guys, dude. Any of you have an opinion on who the better Harbaugh coach is?
I'm gonna take the Ravens bull because of the experience, but that's kind of a caveat in and of itself.
Because my thing is, let's see how he does in the playoffs. It's a whole different game.
Yeah. So. Because then you know if the Niners make the playoffs and make an early exit, then a lot of the doubters will come back and say like, see, I told you, like what they did. Really didn't mean anything, but I tried to be a doubter, and I tried to use the division as an excuse until I actually looked at the schedule and realized like they're going to end the season, you know, mopping up with their weak division. So you know you got to give them props on going outside of division, traveling several time zones in multiple weeks. To handle their business because they did that before. Even I believe one time they stayed in Ohio for the week instead of going all the way back to San Francisco. But
yeah. All right, let me ask you guys a question. We got a couple minutes left. I'm gonna bring up something that's.
Roy had a point, though. Just to kind of wrap up that whole which coach is better. Yeah, I think you got to wait a couple seasons on that because, I mean, remember, you know, when Mike Singletary got to the 49ers, you know, we thought he was, you know, turning that team around. And then all of a sudden, you know, he started going crazy and pulling his pants down and you know, yelling at Vernon Davis. and then everything that we knew he was kind of overmatched. So, I mean, I think it's kind of too early to make the call on Jim Harbaugh.
Only thing about Jim, he got two teams balling at the same time. He got Stanford balling. He got the Niners balling. And they're all from the same area. He got two Bay Area teams getting it in. Go ahead.
Yo, We got a couple minutes left before we check out, but let me bring up this last story that I found, and I found interesting. I want to get you guys' take on it. And yes, it is a sport. Hulk Hogan, did you guys see what happened in his divorce?
Nah, I missed that.
Let me give you some numbers and get your reaction.
They gave her everything.
Hold on. It wasn't a 50-50. She got more than 70% of the liquid assets. Not only that, she got... They gave her 40% ownership in all of his companies that he owned. She walked away out of the cash they had. She got $7.44 million and left him with $2.97 million.
Hold on.
Right? Now, hold on. They have to sell their home. The home is on the market for $8.87 million. Once it's sold, she gets $1.45 million off the top. Then they split it. All right. She also
Wait a minute.
I ain't done yet. She got a Mercedes Benz, a Corvette, a Cadillac Escalade, and a Rolls Royce.
They were married
26 years.
They must have caught my man Terry splacking his daughter and her mom.
He must have cheated with her mother or something. Like,
yo, I think he cheated with Brutus Beefcake, because there's no way she must have to keep her mouth shut about something. How does she like walk away with all that?
Everything.
That's one of the Tiger deals. I'm gonna give you the hush money.
I got a question on this one. And forget how much she got. How is it that Hulk Hogan, after wrestling for like 47 years, only has $11 million?
The biggest name in the sport, for that matter.
Yeah. Did she get his yellow Hulkamaniac shirts? Does he even rip?
Yo, she has 40% stake in all his companies. So, like, if he has anything else that's going on where he's making income, she owns 40% of the company.
Damn.
Yeah, but she doesn't get
40% of them
Hulkamaniacs. Any of his new stuff. Like, if he goes on to do another venture, or if he,
if he starts new companies and does anything else, he doesn't have to worry about paying her anything that he does from this point on. But, I mean, in terms of what they already had, I mean, she didn't get body slammed one time.
That's worse than, that sounds... Based on the splits, worse than what Bob Johnson went through.
Well, he had more, so he can take that hit a little better.
Yeah, he had more.
Let me put you on the spot real quick, man.
Yeah.
What's the most memorable Thanksgiving Day football moment that you can think of?
It's probably got to be. I think it's probably the same for most Eagles fans out there. It's probably got to be the Bounty Bowl. It's probably got to be the bowl, the time we laid out. Like all the Dallas Cowboys. I think it was 89. I think it was the Bounty Bowl.
The kicker that used to kick for us.
Yeah. Was it Zendejas?
Yeah.
It was just... Anytime you can take the Cowboys out like that, on national TV, it was a good memory. So that's probably my Thanksgiving memory.
Austin, what's yours?
Bounty Bowl. I can't believe he said that. I was going there. Bounty
Jimmy, what's yours?
Bowl.
Yo, it's funny because it has to be that because... There were a lot of games that happened, but you really even remember any of them. Wasn't that Thanksgiving when the ball from the Cowboys,
Leon Lett.
Leon Lett.
Yeah, they were playing the Dolphins, too.
Leon Lett or it has to be the Bounty Bowl. I mean, All right,
before Jimmy get us out of here, I got two. And the first one, Jimmy was around for, because this was back in, like, eighth grade. At our school, we had the Turkey Bowl. Flag football game. I ran the opening kickoff back, but I stepped out of bounds by like 3 yards and the ref didn't see it, and I still got the touchdown. And then 96, I was out stunting in front of the King Germantown game looking at the chicks, and some other dude was driving down the street looking at the chicks too, and we banged out. So we looked stupid in front of the chicks. Yo, those are my two most memorable moments.
I was playing in that turkey ball. I definitely remember that, yo. But anyway, man.
I stepped out of bounds and ran into the crowd. Knocked people down in the crowd, and dude still called it a touchdown.
Yeah, no doubt. Shout out to Mr. Coleman for giving you the touchdown on that. But,
shout out to PJ, Akil, and Chris. Happy Thanksgiving, fellas. We got to do this again on
absolutely.
A bigger scale.
Absolutely.
So we can get more advertisements for the War Room and the Broad Street line. We're going to do it right. But
no doubt. Thank you, everybody, for joining us in the war room this evening. for our second annual Thanksgiving special. Special thanks to Roy Burton of the Broad Street Lounge for hosting it with us this evening. Shout out to you, Roy. Check out his show every Wednesday at 6 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio, and that is called the Broad Street Lounge. Tune in here next week, same time, same place, to get your sports fix for the week, that Blue Magic. Enjoy the rest of your turkey day, and don't shop too hard tomorrow. Have a great weekend. Until next week, we will talk to you.
We holla.
We all agree.
Extra P, Stacey Beetle, PJ, and my man LG. They know the hashtag.